A big thanks to all our sponsors. Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento is a subscription service that brings a box of comics to your door every month. Check out our website, thetalkinggeekpod.com. Click the link, subscribe, and wait for your comics to hit the mailbox.
Eyeballs float in wet green grass. I got a chainsaw motor that's filled with rain. But when it sings like Bach, the eyes all bulge. And when the pink sun drops, the eyelids fold while I'm in deep REM sleep. Or twilight zones, I take a freight elevator, better fast forward. I get to grind these teeth and peek through time. If I can bring things back, then feed back wild and wet. I saw the future.
Hey, this is V the Fried Nugget.
Hey, this is Tim the Member.
Hey, guys, this is Q the Face.
Hey, this is Kenny the Bear with the underscore in front of it.
Hey, this is Pedro the Air Horn.
And this is The Talking Geek.
Here we go.
Here we go.
On the wax.
Oh, yeah. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
This is a special episode because, first of all, it's only myself and Bear.
That's right. Special edition.
That's right.
Crazy bullshit.
No trolling. Not this time. Not this time.
No, lonely love.
Yeah.
If you're trolling, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And this is a special episode because we're going to be talking only Stranger Things.
Yeah, this is
things.
We one topic.
Yes, one topic. Also, only Bear and I, because we're the only ones who totally binged it.
Yeah, we kind of grossly consumed all of this.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it separated, but I didn't. Because I my willpower was weak.
No, I wanted to consume. I just wanted to jam it in my eyes as quickly as possible.
No, I had a -3 in will, and therefore I lost.
I rolled a 2.
I was done for.
Yeah,
I think it was a total of maybe 2 episodes the first night, but then boom, slammed them on Saturday. That by Sunday, I think I was done.
Yeah.
I think I maybe had one episode
I
left
watched
to watch
the first episode with you. When I went home, the wireless in my room was terrible, so I had to rewire my Ethernet cable. So I had to wait until Saturday. And then Saturday I watched the next 4, and then I watched the last 4 episodes on Sunday.
On Sunday. So you see, I was even done before you. Like, that's bad. Yeah. Pretty bad. But so, yeah. So, and I'm going to say this now. We're only 2 minutes into this recording. Spoilers.
Yeah.
If you have not, I'm not doing that this time where we're going to break up and we're going to talk in this weird code shit.
Mm-mm.
Not happening. Okay. So if you have not finished season 2, stop listening right now. Keep this in your whatever you listen to us in as not played yet and just wait till you finish and then listen because we're going to be diving into the entire season.
Yeah.
All 9 episodes and we're not going to hold back and we're not going to do them in order because we're just going to talk about how we loved it and or what we didn't like and all that other jazz. And so stop listening.
Yeah.
You have been warned. Warned.
Last
warned.
Warning. Get off this train. Get off the spoiler train.
Get off the spoiler train. That way you don't hate us later for it. I loved season 2.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, I put it on the same level as the first season.
Okay.
Like, I didn't like it more. It's pretty much equal with it. Like, I really can't think of too many, like, immediately large criticisms of it. Like, I've seen the first season enough times where, like, I can kind of go back and forth with some of the things. Like, okay, this works, this doesn't work. Mind you, I've only seen it one time. But based off that first reaction, like, it's really fucking good, guys.
It's really fucking good. I have seen the first season now, I think, 3 or 4 times. So I could go back and kind of nitpick stuff. And even then, there was very few things for
There's
me
not
to,
a
nitpick.
Lot to nitpick. There.
There really wasn't. I always put more weight in the first one because it came in raw without any...
Blind expectations.
Without any expectations. So I always give the first season of anything that I'm really, really into a lot of weight. Because of that fact, like, well, you drew me in without even knowing what you were doing, and now season 2, you're keeping me here. So I give you credit for that. But all in all, I loved it. I thought that the first episode.
Okay, but before we get into the actual talk, what were your expectations going into the second season?
I think that I didn't have any. I wanted to make sure that they stayed as nostalgic as they were in the first season, and I know that some people wanted it to be toned down on all the 80s references, and I thought that that was stupid.
No,
the show's in the 80s, so how are you going to tone down 80s? But I also tried to stay as green as possible. Like, I watched the first original trailer that went out, I saw the second one that went out, and then I stopped. So I didn't see any more trailers
beyond
after
the second
the first
one. Oh, like, did you see the Thriller trailer?
Okay,
no?
That's the last one I saw.
That's the second trailer, yeah.
Yeah, that's the last one I saw, and that was mainly because
I didn't want to know too much.
I didn't want to know too much. The trailer with the Thriller background song and the remix of it
fucking
was already
perfect.
Good enough. It was good enough. So for me, it was like, all right, I'm just going to go into this semi-blind. I know that Eleven is going to be back. I know that we're fighting something else. And I know, and I thought that they did a good job in not showing us too much in that trailer to begin with, where most times we get so much in the trailers that then it kind of ruins it because you kind of expect all of these other things, especially in movies. The MCU has a really bad habit of in trailers showing you way too much.
Yeah.
And so does the DC.
More DC. Marvel has done done some interesting things with hiding a couple things sometimes.
DC for the most part shows you everything. Yeah. You're like, why am I even watching this movie? I'm just going to watch this trailer over and over.
Yeah, and sometimes most of the times the trailers are better than the actual movies.
Yeah. That happens
like,
a lot.
Like Suicide Squad. Yeah, like great trailer, shit fucking movie.
Horrible fucking movie, which is why they did such a great trailer.
Yeah.
Try to bring you in.
You sold me on the trailer, but didn't sell me on that movie.
So yeah, I didn't really have like way too many expectations. I was excited for it. I kind of went into it going, this is a sci-fi horror show, which is already out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And I love it. So there's, unless you get campy, which you don't have a budget, you have a bigger budget that you don't need to be campy.
Yeah.
I can't see you disappointing me. Not this second season. Usually shows that are good start to disappoint you seasons 5, season 6, because they've ran for too long.
Yeah.
And there's very little
they have
little
no
they
idea
can
where
do.
They're going.
Right. But this one I was like, no, I had none. Did you have any...
So it was interesting because, like, based off of those trailers, I was like, okay, I get the feeling that these guys know what they're doing, so I was willing to kind of sit back and kind of let them take me. And specifically with, like, the small touches of, like, seeing the kids in the Ghostbuster outfits, because it completely makes sense that they would be Ghostbusters. Putting Thriller, seeing the Steve in a risky business outfit.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, so pop culturally, the things that really made that world feel like it was at that time period that they're nailing. Then you follow with very clearly an expanded version of the Upside Down with, in the trailer, you actually see it spin upside down with Hopper. I'm like, okay, so they're making it larger, like the stakes are a lot bigger, they're not really telling me what it is, but you know what? I was very willing to give them that shot because, again, they earned that goodwill after that first season.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I kind of went into it like that and I'm happy that you and I saw the first episode together.
Yeah.
Because we both got to notice things and be like, oh my God, did you see that callback? Or did you see this?
Yeah.
Or did you see that? Oh my God, that was such a beautiful shot. And what I love about the show, and I'm just going to say this as a general thing, is their attention to detail does not go over my head. And I know that, and I was talking to, I can't remember who I was talking to this about, talking about this too, but we are in the art world and we are in the theater world and in all that. So we have a different level of appreciation that TV and film bring to the table. I can comment on directing versus, oh, the acting was horrible, but I can see the director's view and I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, so I can dissect it into different fractions and decide on that. And for me, they hit all of them.
Yeah.
Like, music is great. The soundtrack works for the
acting.
Holy
fuck, what a great sound. Like, okay, beyond just the actual incidental music, the licensed music they picked.
Perfectly.
Fucking so good.
Chosen songs. Like, perfectly chosen songs. So, on all aspects of it, in that first episode, they managed to jump me a year and me not give a fuck that I don't get all the answers in that one episode. Not entirely. We still don't know what happened to the Upside Down. We don't know entirely how we're pulling off this Will bullshit or anything else that's happened for that matter.
But the great part about it is you get the sensation, okay, this is a full year later.
Yes.
And you don't need to know what happened in between because just the way that the kids are acting gives you an idea of, oh, these kids have been through a whole fucking year of their life. Like, they're just different enough
right.
where you're like, oh, there is growth here. but, you know, still, you know, personality-wise the same.
Yeah, because we don't get the full backstory in the first episode. You're getting it just from a year later. This is where they all are a year later. We'll figure out, you get the rest of what happened in that interim in later episodes. You find out how what happened to Eleven and the whole nine, but... First of all, Nancy's haircut fucking works beautifully for her. They should keep that hair on her at all times because she looks, she was always pretty. She looked hot.
She looks, yeah, she looks very hot. Yeah, this season where I was just like, okay,
you
okay,
were
you
pretty
got, you got
in the first season. You're hot in this one. I dig it. I dig
She went beyond, because I remember seeing in the first season where she looks interesting. Now she's just like hot. Like,
yeah.
You're
like, okay, no, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. And then, so in that first episode, it was, and I had kind of posted something about it on Facebook, and a lot of people asked me questions because I was like, oh, this season should be called Stranger Feels. And I people thought that I was trolling the season. They were like, oh, why would you say that? And I was just like, because it's filled with emotion.
Yeah.
Like the whole season is, and just the first episode, the last 2 minutes of it.
Oh, my God. I just got choked up.
Yeah, is so many emotions. And I was talking to Kenny, because Kenny's actually seen the first episode, and he was like, but I don't understand. And I was like, then you are incapable of feeling.
Like the fact, like, the, oh, my God. Well, first of all, Eleven ending up with Hopper is the one thing that makes the most sense considering Hopper's past, too.
Exactly.
That Hopper... like missing a daughter, of course you would immediately take care of fucking Eleven.
And you can assume that it's going to happen because you do see in the last episode of the first season that he's leaving Eggles for her in a box in the middle of the forest. So you kind of get the idea that he's trying to
find her.
But you don't know to the extent that that's going to go because he could just find her, help her, ship her off. Like, we don't know what arrangement he's made for everything. Like, you know, we don't know any of that. So to see them eating dinner like father and daughter.
Yes. Oh, my God.
It gives me goosebumps. It still gives me goosebumps because for so many levels, not only Hopper and his past, the only idea that Eleven has of a father is Papa.
It's fucking garbage.
Yeah. Is the asshole who tormented her.
Who, by the way, comes back in several, like, weird psychic episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, like, Matthew Modine is just so fucking great with the level of, like, calm malice that he can project.
Yes. All he has to do is just walk in the room and you're already like, I hate
oh,
you
God,
and you're weird.
You're such
and
a dick.
Yeah. So that whole scene of just them sitting down to eat dinner together, how he knocks a special way, how he's trying to bring her out, like that whole, just that 2 minutes for me made the whole episode.
Yeah.
That I was just like, what a great way to give me that in such a minuscule way, because you didn't make it this grand thing, very small. Now you know that Eleven is with Hopper, and that's all you need to
know.
And they're
comfortable.
Yes. Yes.
Which is really interesting because, I mean, everybody knew that Eleven was coming back based off the trailers,
of
right?
Of course.
But, you know, most people, I thought that was going to be like a late series thing. No. Right from the first episode, not only is she back, she's been back for a while.
Yeah. And that was another thing because, like, you and I had talked about that. I was like, oh, we're probably going to get, I had assumed we'll get episode 3 or 4. Halfway through, we'll finally get Eleven back, and then we'll go into whatever it is that happened. And no, I was happily surprised that we got her in the first one, and I was like, oh, I wonder how this is going to work out. And so that entire thing was just fantastic for me. You have Emo Mike that you get to see that he's seriously brokenhearted about everything that's happened with Eleven and the whole nine. So it was just like a great way of giving us all these characters, where they are. Joyce doesn't look as crazy and insane.
Oh, I would hazard to say that she is just as crazy and insane, but in the opposite of just being so overprotective of Will, which you understand, like, after, like, literally what that poor kid has
been
through.
Like, she looks more put together, even in her overprotectiveness. She just looks more put together, because even in the first season, Joyce looked out of whack from the first one.
Well, I think it also helps that with the addition of...
Of Bob.
The MVP of the fucking... Well, no. The true MVP is Steve's nail bat, but we'll get into that.
We'll get into that a little bit later.
But Bob, Sean Astin is Bob coming in and sort of like giving her a romantic foil to work off of. Like,
oh yeah, it was great. That was a good addition for her, and it was something that she needed to be able to balance her. And I think it's funny because so we see that he's in the show. Now every time he pops out, I yell Sam, and then I would yell Frodo, right? So we're sitting down and we're talking to Damien. Me and Vanessa are talking to Damien about it or something like that. And he makes a mention. He was like, oh, I'm only on this episode. I'm where Bob is doing this. And I was just like, yeah, fucking Sam, right? And Vanessa then goes, oh, my God, is that Sam from the Lord of the Rings? And I stopped and I was like, wait a second. Are you just putting that together now?
Because he looks like Patton Oswalt.
He
does. He's straight
up. He does. But I was like, how are you just putting that together now? Why do you think that I kept screaming Sam and Frodo to the TV screen? I was like, did you just think I was like having like some sort of like Lord of the Rings Tourette's?
That the two of us were doing it back and forth.
I was just like, how long? No, but then I did it every episode after that. I was just like, what did you think? I just had like Lord of the Rings Tourette's. Yeah. I was just randomly naming the same two characters over and over again.
That's what she lives with you. You just every so often you're like, Legolas!
Like, what? I was just like, I can't believe it. But he was great. There was a lot of actual new addition characters. You had Billy, Max, Bob, Callie, Dr. Owens, Erica, which is Lucas's sister, which is like the mother of all sass.
Oh my God, such a sassy
little
girl.
And then you had Murray, which was the conspiracy theorist,
reporter,
the investigator, private eye investigator slash reporter.
Who, by the way, Sean Astin interviewed for first.
Yes. Which is pretty fucking hilarious.
Which is kind of crazy to think if they had been that dude versus Bob. Who the fuck would have been Bob?
Yeah, I know, right? Who the hell? Which would, I know, he played that character perfectly. And actually, he's the reason that they made that character bigger than he was.
Yeah.
Because they were going to make that character smaller.
That's happened to almost every character in this show. Like, well, Dustin wasn't supposed to be as thick. Steve was supposed to be killed in the first fucking season.
Steve was supposed to be just the bully, and he brought a different level to it that they needed to introduce Billy, because Steve was no longer he wasn't the douchebag
anymore.
He's cool. And I appreciate the Duffer Brothers for that, because you have sometimes writers and directors who really are stuck to the way that they envision this, and I think that they are very intelligent in their choices and in allowing the actors to bring a new level that they go, maybe we should just go with that.
Yeah.
Because that works. You know, like you said, Dustin was just supposed to be your basic stereotypical nerd character that is like, da, 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 like in moments. And he brought more to that. And Steve, the same thing. And now Bob, the same thing. And so they've done that with a lot of characters that I have to appreciate them for that. As writers going, you know what? This guy plays this character really good. He's going to have to stick around. We got to figure out a way to make this change, you know, to do this differently. So Mad Max is the first episode, and we get introduced to who Mad Max is, which is the new character, the chick, the love interest, if you will.
Well, she's more than a love interest, but
she's a love interest to Dustin and Lucas.
Well, no, I mean, she is a love interest, but she does do her own
shit.
Oh, no,
she does her own shit. But she's introduced as one, the girl who's beat them in video games in an arcade, Palace Arcade.
Oh, by the way, I didn't pick up when I was watching it. Dig Dug, literally digging underground. I did not fucking pick up the connection with
then
the fucking show.
You have an episode called Dig Dug, which is the episode where they're digging out.
I literally
copper.
Did not even fucking think about that until after it was done.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, yeah, no, we got the license to get Dig Dug, and the second they said that, I was like, oh my God, these motherfuckers are genius.
They're genius. And even down to Dragon's Lair. Mm-hmm. Dragon's Lair was chosen because you're supposed to save the princess, and that was their way of foreshadowing that Max was the princess that both Dustin and Lucas would end up trying to fight over.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the way that they put these things together, really, honestly, is just amazing, and I'd love to go back and like find all those little Easter eggs that like attached
also,
to one another.
I also appreciate the fact that, you know, as much as it was very clear that both of them had a crush on them, they weren't shitty to each other.
No, they weren't, which was cool.
They were shitty to each other. I mean, yes, it was connected to her, but for actual legit reasons.
Yeah, like, hey, you weren't supposed to tell her our fucking secret, and I can't believe you fucking told her our secret. Yeah. It wasn't
and
about...
And then it was, you kept this fucking demon dog. Well, yes.
Yes, yeah, you know, which I found funny. It's funny how shows will change certain things. I have one of the shirts that say "Friends don't lie" on them. I bought it in the Stranger Things font. And so when Dustin first lies about the polywag dart, which was hilarious.
D'Artagnan.
Yes, which was a great way to name him. I looked at Vanessa and I was like, he just broke the rule of law. And she was like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "Friends don't lie. He just broke the rule of law."
Yeah.
And then there went Lucas, and I was like, what is going on? You grow up, and then you just forget the friends don't lie.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I had this, like, literal anger in me. I was just like, you lied. Therefore, you deserve to have your cat eaten, because you're an asshole.
Jesus Christ. I thought, okay, so when that happened, okay, we're not talking spoilers here, so I'm assuming you've already seen this.
Yeah.
So when they're doing that panning shot, I thought it was the turtle, because I heard the crunching sound. I was like, oh, this is going to get really raw. And then it was the cat, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's the same idea, but it's not as, for some reason, like, I can't fucking stand cats, so I was like, I want to vote worse for that turtle.
The only reason I knew it was cat is because in like, most shows, whatever.
She was saying, oh, she was looking for the cat.
Well,
yeah.
no, and even before then, in the first episode, she's petting the cat, and he makes a comment about Muse. And so, like anything, whenever a non-important character is named two or three times, or whenever a specific area is zoomed in for a long shot, you're like, something's going to happen with these things. So I didn't expect them to kill the cat. Like, I expected the cat to be chased or maybe get lost in the Upside Down or something like that. I did not expect the brutality.
Yo, that cat got fucked up.
That was a baby Demogorgon eating it, you know?
A demi-dog, if you will.
A demi-dog. Yeah, that was... Dustin had so many great one-liners.
So, okay, so I would say that, like, with all the great characters in this season, I have to say that by far my favorite two characters are Dustin and Steve.
Oh my god!
Like, those two, both of those characters, them getting left behind by their individual groups, and they pair them off, and it ends up being this very strange kind of brotherly relationship that they have.
Yeah, like he's like Steve's the older brother, trying to help him out with chicks and how to do his hair.
Yeah, which is like
three pumps of Farrah Fawcett.
That's such a charming thing because you think about like how Steve has grown from the first season, and he's like, I like my fucking girlfriend probably left. By the way, this was interesting, kind of looking at it, that like he's the one that puts himself out for Nancy here, and Nancy is the one that rejects him, right?
Yeah.
So he's trying to work his way back up with Nancy, and he fucking fails. I think is an interesting change from him being the dick that he was in the first season.
Yeah, definitely.
So he's already fucking failing with this girl. Dustin has failed. The girl, he has this fucking fucked up monster.
And his friends are nowhere to be found.
He's nowhere to be fucking found. And then the true MVP of the show is introduced, the fucking nail bat, which is still in Steve's trunk.
Yes.
This means this whole year, this motherfucker was like, because it's not like one thing where like you leave a jacket in your trunk, you leave a pillow in your trunk, you leave a bag. No, this is a fucking nail bat. You get that shit the fuck out.
Which brings me to something I wanted to talk about, because so he's had this bat in his trunk for an entire year after this masses, that after this shit goes down. So what ends up happening between, so we know that the epic bullshit episode, which was the episode two, which was a trick or treat freak, which is the Halloween episode, Nancy gets super fucking drunk and goes through this whole, you're bullshit, our love is bullshit, everything is bullshit.
I love that because I'm like, you're fucking bullshit. I have gotten that talk before, so I was like, oh, this is real.
But what I thought was interesting was that you start to see the riff in them in the first episode when they go to visit Barb's parents, and she's having this whole issue because Steve is acting like nothing has happened, and she's not able to kind of get over that. She's not able to sit there and lie. She's getting over lying to Barb's family and knowing that they're now about to spend all their money and sell their house to go give their money to this private investigator when she already knows what happened.
Yeah.
But I think Vanessa was like, oh, he's acting like a dick. And a part of me had to go, okay, wait a second. If you had been threatened by your life that you couldn't talk about this particular event, and you are a guy like Steve, who's very simple minded for the most part, you're going to abide by that. It's not that you're so cold-hearted or that you just don't care.
Well, he's also, like, I get the feeling more from Steve that he was trying to be a rock. Like, he was trying to be, like, steady, and then, like, a lot of things, him not being allowed to express his emotions.
And so I think that he really wasn't necessarily being a dick. I think that you're saying, like, what you're saying is right. He was trying to be the rock, trying to remind her of what is at stake if they decide to make this step, even though it might be the right step to make. Now, of course, Steve is 17, 18 years old. He's not actually explaining this like an adult to his girlfriend. He's like, we can't talk about it. There's nothing we can do. So it sounds very dickish, but when you realize that he's had that bat in his trunk for an entire year, he's not over what happened either. Mm-hmm. He's just putting up a front better than Nancy is. And so she's seeing it as, well, you're not as down and gullum about it like Jonathan. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't think that she gave Steve enough credit.
Oh, no. And then the whole thing where he was saying, hey, let's go to this stupid party and do this. Like, the whole thing that, like, I got from that was more that he really cares about her. So what he's trying to do is, like, this is a problem, but we cannot do anything about this. So for now, let's do this, try to keep ourselves distracted, and try not to cause a problem.
Yeah, and you see,
and you get both sides. You understand her frustration, but you also get him trying to be, you know.
And another thing is how he was at that party. He was already not the guy. He didn't give a shit that he was losing the keg
championship. You noticed that? He didn't give a fuck.
He was trying to stop her from drinking as much as she was. So maybe he's not expressing what the last year has done to him like everybody else, but you see it in those really small moments.
In his actions,
and not caring about this, and not wanting to do that, in brushing off Billy like it's no big deal. Good, you know what? Take the fucking reins.
Literally, his reaction is like, basically like, will you shut the fuck up? Like, not even like
I don't give a fuck. I saved people with a bat last year. Like, fuck your face.
I got a nail bat in my fucking trunk.
Like, I hit a Demogorgon. You think I care about a keg stand? Like, I don't give a shit about a keg stand.
So when I first saw the show, I had my bigger weaker link was Billy.
Oh,
I was
yes.
really irritated with Billy, and I thought that it was completely unnecessary, even for Sam's arc. But then I thought about like the levels of like where they're pulling this type of character from, and like they say they needed a human antagonist, and I think less than needing a human antagonist, I think Billy serves as one a show of how kind of fucked certain types of parenting is. Like, dropping an F-bomb in this show, like, was, that surprise was like, oh, shit, which, of course, makes sense considering the time period.
Yeah.
But also, it shows, like, he's there to also show Steve's growth.
I think he did better at showing Steve's growth than being the human antagonist, by far.
And that one time when his father was bullying him and he breaks, I thought that was really interesting. I love it when shows are able to take, like, shitty fucking people. They're not redeemable. But give them an ounce of humanity. And just giving an ounce of humanity to a character like that gives them more dimension.
If I had to say anything, I still think that Billy was the weakest of season. But I still think that it was, for me personally, I didn't need to know about his dad. I figured that shit at home must not be okay for you to be such a dick. I also think that they dragged it on a little bit too long because that scene doesn't change anything.
I think what it does more, I think it couches it in Max escaping and what could get him so fucking pissed that would lead him to literally go out on like a hell ride to find out, you know, what's going on. And I think the bullying transference from, you know, from the father
to the son. I mean, I get what you're saying, but for me, it was like, eh.
Yeah.
I kind of figured that was it. You didn't really need to show it to me, and I didn't need to see that much of Billy because even in his bullying, it wasn't like over the top. Like, it wasn't human antagonist. Like, I can't believe. Like, I felt Steve was a bigger dick in the first season when he was supposed to be the bully. Like, grabbing Jonathan's camera and throwing it on the floor and breaking it
Jesus Christ,
was a bigger thing and a bigger bully fucked up thing to do than anything Billy did this entire season.
Yeah.
Nothing that he did was even close. Like, not even...
Well, the picking up a kid because you're a fucking racist and throwing him against the wall is pretty fucked up.
It is, but again, you didn't break his camera and you didn't even punch him. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you grabbed him and you threw him up against the wall.
Plus, also, I did also appreciate to see Max stab him in the fucking neck with a needle.
That I loved.
And then whipped out the fucking nail. Again, the MVP, the fucking nail bat.
The nail bat. And I love all of that. But it wasn't, that was the weakest part for me. For me, if I had to say anything about the show, it was like, Billy was unnecessary. And
Billy almost fucking Mrs. Wheeler. That was pretty great.
That was pretty great. It was the only moment that I was just like, oh, okay, I see why you're important. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, sure, why not?
See him be charming, because you never saw him be charming the whole time.
All.
And then that literally is, you see him turn it on. So it's that level of sociopathy.
And then what upset me was, if you're going to have him be the bully, then he needs to be the bully across the board to really be a human antagonist, and he wasn't. He was a bully to Steve, and he was a bully to Max. That's it. And the one moment with Lucas, which is much later on in the season, but if you had been showing me that he was a dick like Steve was, like the other kids to Dustin and his group were in the first season, that's what should have been the human antagonist, where everybody hates Billy. Dustin hates Billy, and Matt and Mike hate Billy. Everybody hates Billy. And then you're like, then you're building
these
that
four
up.
Four kids, fuck this guy.
Yeah, but it's not. It's Steve, who doesn't even give a shit about everything that Billy is saying. Like, doesn't even care. The worst thing he did to him was turn off the water on him while he was showering.
Well, and then he also punched. Well, to be fair.
Well,
that
was much later, and they both fucked each other up, except that Steve, poor Steve. Steve always ends up with a lot of shit.
He just gets the shit beat out of him.
Yeah, he does. But so I thought that was the weakest part of the show was him. I loved Max, and although I was very much like Mike, like, who the fuck are you?
Yes.
You're not 11. Why the fuck are you in this group? And why does everybody here act like 11 ain't gone? And now we're just going to replace her with any random bitch. Like, this is not cool.
But the scene where, like, she's talking to Mike, and Mike starts to warm up to her, which I like that, because it's like, again, like, there's something about being able to connect, like, that's where a lot of these types of shows fall apart with human interactions. That when somebody stays like fucking.
Oh, yeah.
But that one, it was like, no. He was like, yeah, I know. I am actually kind of like, you saw that starting to break down once he started to communicate with her.
Though it comes right back because he still is really pissed off when she's invited to things that she wasn't supposed to be invited in.
Oh, yeah, because that moment, well, that was a moment, and that moment is gone.
Yeah, well, and that moment led him to remember 11 because the minute that she says, oh, it felt like this weird magnetic pulled me off the thing, he looks up and knows immediately. That's 11. And runs to go look for her. And that was like such a moment for me that I was like, please find her. Like, I want you to find her so bad. And they did such a good job with that for me. That whole back and forth pull between Mike and 11 and him trying to search for her on the walkie-talkie. And then you know that she's connected
counting
to him.
Counting the fucking days.
Oh, my God. Look, that line at the end when they finally see each other and she's punk 11 and he was just like, I never gave up on you. I tried calling you every, and she finishes it for 353 days. I was just like, oh my God, you are the relationship goals I still want in my life. And I'm already like married, but these are the goals that I'm going for.
So let's dial it back. Let's talk about 11 because I think 11 has, being one of the most important characters in the show.
Yeah.
Let's talk about like her growth from season one to season two. So right away you saw in the beginning of the second episode, like, you see that, like, she wasn't gone that long. Like, she fucking came back almost immediately, had to do some hiding in the woods, get some fried squirrel, and then managed to get picked up by Hopper. And seeing the way how Hopper was dealing with her, and of like rebellious teenager, obviously the difference between a rebellious teenager and a normal her is that, you know,
she's
one can have
powers.
A psychic fucking freak out.
She's got fucking powers.
So one of the biggest contentions in this season is the seventh episode leaves. Okay, so we need to address this because I thought that when the episode started, but by the time it ended, I was like, no, I see exactly what they were doing here for multiple reasons.
Okay, so the name of this episode was called The Lost Sister, though Bear and I have dubbed it the Chicago episode. And I'm going to hate on every trolling motherfucker that has bitched and complained about that episode. I didn't hate it from the beginning.
I didn't hate it.
But like, that you were like, heh. Most people had a reservation, and I didn't have a reservation because if I love anything when it comes to theater and plays, I've always been a stickler about character development. That is my number one thing. If a show lacks that, I'm out. Whether everything else is great, I'm out. Which is why sometimes I have a hard time with shows like Game of Thrones because they limit their character development to the characters that are the most important and things like that. That was pivotal. That episode for me was extremely important for many reasons. Mm-hmm. Important for Eleven's development. It set up things for seasons to come.
Yep.
Because now you always knew that if her name is 11, there must have been 1 through 10 that were before her. You meet some of them in the first season.
In fact, the show starts off with the introduction of number 8.
Yeah, that's how the show starts. So you've already been given this Easter egg that you know you're going to have to figure out eventually what it is that's happening. Why is she important? And for all, like, at the beginning, I was like, oh, this might just be, this is the only time we're going to see 8, and that we're not going to get it until maybe the end of this season to kick off season 3. So when they brought her back, and I kind of already saw it happening with the episodes where 11 finds her mom and starts this whole thing, and then when she starts to get into her mom's brain and realize what happened, I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. No, once 11 ran into her mother, I was like, okay, they're going to resolve that.
They're going to resolve, and I was excited for it. And I thought that it was extremely important because 11's entire situation is she's an outcast on many levels. She has no home. She doesn't know of her parents. She's still learning everything from the beginning.
She has no family.
And they're setting this up from the beginning. When she's asking Hopper about mom, do I have a mom? And he's already like, no, she's gone. You know, this or that. She's got this hunger for this place to call home. And she can't find it because with Hopper at the moment, she's trapped. She can't go out. She can't do anything. The only person who gave her a sense of home is Mike. And Mike is a kid who can't offer her anything more than a fort in his basement. Like, you know what I mean? So I felt like the episode with Callie was important because she needed to test herself out. Let me try this rebellious bullshit. Let me wear this bitchin' outfit and let me do all of this stuff and then realize, no, this isn't who I am. This isn't my home. This isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. She felt bad she felt bad about what she was doing.
Well, she didn't feel bad. She didn't feel bad, and she was fine with following some, again, the problem is that she keeps following other people's advice. And that was sort of the thing where she kept listening to other people instead of not necessarily like picking and choosing like what she believes is right, but she was just like, oh, other people have opinions, but guess what? I'm strong enough to know that I have my own opinion. The first time she made a choice of her own was leaving
Hopper.
Kali.
No. Oh, well, I would say leaving Hopper.
I mean, leaving Hopper was the first one, but I feel that the big, because that
I
one,
think that's
no,
so
that
rebellious.
One she was, that one she was driven to.
Yes,
that wasn't
right.
an actual choice.
You're
the
right.
choice right there, because she could have gone back with Kali and worked that out, but she
yeah.
chose to decide to come back and save everybody.
And to go home.
And to
I'm
go,
going
and to go,
home.
She
I'm
knows
going
where
home
that.
To my friends
yeah.
and my family. Like that, and that I thought was great. And that scene where fucking Kali gets into her brain and shows her papa.
Yes.
Holy
yeah.
crap.
Made me so uncomfortable. Made me so uncomfortable in just like the manipulation.
Yeah,
just,
and
like,
I don't know if you saw Beyond Stranger Things.
I'm only on the third episode.
Okay, well, there's one with her, and they talk about that scene. And she says, to date, that's the most difficult thing she's ever filmed.
Kali?
No, 11.
11?
Yeah, Millie?
No, Millie.
Millie, yes. Okay. Millie. She's got one of those three names actors like to do now. But she talked about how difficult it was, and they asked her, was it just the hours? And she goes, no, the emotional place I had to get to and be in. She was like, I felt 4'11". Like, I was 11, and so that was super hard for me. She was like, I stopped filming, and I ran to my trailer and cried. She just cried for an hour. And you're talking about a kid. Who has to, that is an intense scene. You have somebody who you know is fucking with your brain, is showing you the one person who you used to have all of this admiration for that you come to realize was the worst person to you, that you thought was your dad, that you thought was this important person and betrayed you.
And then you have your sister that you found who is also betraying you by
yes.
trying to manipulate you.
Yes, and
it's
so
like,
it
oh my
is
God.
So emotionally draining that I thought it was good. Was it different from everything else? I'll give those who were like, eh, about it. Yeah, it was different. You weren't expecting it. I liked that I wasn't expecting that. I'm like that we left Hawkins for a little bit. And I like that we got to see somebody else.
See the greater world.
The greater world. I like to see that. And I don't think the people really realize is now you know that 8 left and is out and about. And just.
And not just out and about. Probably not very happy with 11.
Well, actually, I don't think that she. I actually think. That Kali understands why 11 left.
You think so?
Yes, because Kali made her family with the band of misfits that she had. And 11 did too. Kali was hoping that 11 would leave that group for her band of misfits, but she also realizes that she wouldn't have. Like, I think that Kali's intelligent enough, and I think that Kali understood, because I don't think that she was really mad when 11 left. I think she knew that that was eventually what was going to be. That's why she tried to manipulate her.
So the way that I'm coming from this is that Kali is very happy to see 11. Like, there is genuine emotion.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
But I also think that the kind of, like, life that she has chosen at this point, this level of vengeance and stuff, like, 11 interrupted that. Like, and not just interrupted it, like, put all of her people
at risk
and then expose them to the cops. So depending on what happens in between these seasons, I would not be surprised if this ends up coming to bite 11 in the ass.
Here's what I think is going to happen between 11 and Kali. I don't think so for a few reasons. Because Kali says something to her when she stops her from being able to kill the guy. 11, she looks and she goes, you can make your own choices, but never take away mine.
Yes.
And that was a very intelligent older sister thing to say.
Yes.
And not with so much anger. It was like, you fucked me over. I understand why you didn't do this thing I wanted you to do.
Right.
But you're not allowed to tell me what to do.
Don't take away my power. Yeah.
And they still get out. And she still helps them get out. And she still tries to talk to her afterwards and sits her down. And so she, and I think that she knows that 11 is going to leave. And why, that's why she manipulates her by putting Papa in her brain to, like, this last stint. Like, let me remind you of what I want you to fight for.
Yeah.
Or what I want you to be angry about enough to fight for. And I think that she realizes that 11 hasn't reached her level of
well, 11 is younger.
Is younger and is less developed socially.
Yeah.
Because 11 is still learning words. She's still learning how to talk. Like, One of my favorite moments, and I have to say it, is the word compromise, halfway happy. Yeah. That is such a great and beautiful way of explaining that, and her being able to, like, so she's still not even understanding 100% like how all of this works, you know, which is why, again, that episode was so much more important for me, because it taught her how to be on her own, how to figure things out, how to realize when somebody's manipulating her and not manipulating her, what her choices are, how important her choices are, and the understanding that family isn't necessarily what you see on TV, but what you make. And that, I think, all needed to happen
right.
in that Chicago episode.
And on top of that, in terms of the actual story, taught her how to use her powers in a more effective way
yes.
at the very end.
Now, what I think is going to happen with Callie is they are going to run into each other again. And I think it's going to be more of a teamwork thing that might end up weird and fuzzy, because they're after people who fucked her over. So obviously Callie's after everybody in the Hawkins lab that did shit to her.
Anybody that's left. Now, not a lot of people left after that scene.
Well, the lab closed because of Nancy.
And most of them got eaten,
but the lab closed.
Yeah.
We still don't know what that means, but I have a feeling that they'll run into each other chasing the same person or the same thing. Or the fact that this shadow monster is just bigger now, and things are, because the Upside Down hasn't disappeared.
Oh yeah, no, it's still there.
And the monster
was defeated, not killed.
Not killed. So that might be a moment where Callie has to come back and help her. That's for me. I actually don't think that Callie's going to come back and go after Eleven. For one, she doesn't have the power that Eleven does, which is finding people. So it's going to be a lot harder for her to find Eleven.
But she knows where the lab is.
Yeah, but now the lab is closed and it was all over the news.
But she'll be able to go there. And she's like, oh, I got to go back and watch it because I don't need to see the specifics about this.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what Eleven told her about, because she said you're living with a cop.
Yes.
And if they're living in a cop by that town, then
I just don't think that there's any reason for Callie to go after Eleven.
I think that's just different interpretations of that last. So that's
yeah.
why when I go back and do my, because I'm definitely going to rewatch this.
Yeah, I have to rewatch it too, and I didn't have enough time to rewatch it before we recorded.
Kind of thinking like I'm going to relook at that scene to see what that reaction is, because there was definitely heartbreak, but I also got more the feeling of like, you fucked with my people and you put me on danger, like, we need to fucking talk.
And
even if it's not as like that aggressive, it's we need to fucking talk.
And I interpreted that differently. I interpreted it as Callie understanding that her younger sister has room to grow.
Okay.
And that she may possibly see her down the road again. And I think that she kind of left that door halfway open, because I actually think that Callie doesn't give a flying fuck about her friends.
Mm-hmm.
She just found her a tribe. And a tribe that is as vengeful as she is,
and
but
angry,
she's still the smarter one. She's still willing to make him see spiders. The dude with the spikes. I can't remember their names right now.
Yeah.
They weren't that important of a character to remember to recall. It was really just like an 80s throwback to having that group of misfits.
But remember, she's also a murderer. Like, we got to remember, like, she's fucking straight up murked people. So
no,
like,
no.
And like, there's, like, a level of, like...
Who do you think would win in a fight between Eleven and Callie?
It depends on who gets the drop. If Callie gets the drop on Eleven, it would be really hard. Unless Eleven had, like, a freak out that, like, hit... remember when she wiped out an entire room full of soldiers?
Yes.
Like, you know...
It would have to be something like that. But the problem is that Callie can get in your brain and totally manipulate the situation you think that you're in.
For limited periods of time, which is kind of interesting that we saw that. Like, she can only keep illusions up for...
A certain lot.
Or maybe for how many... Maybe it's a more how many people, as opposed to...
I think it's something like that. I think I remember, because it's the scene where they're standing still and all the soldiers are walking right by them. I thought that was awesome. But yeah, I think that it would definitely depend on who got the drop on her. And I think that Eleven has the power of strength. Like, of being able to manipulate things to kill you, where she has the manipulation of fucking with what you're seeing and what you're thinking.
Yeah. The gambler is keeping it up enough for having it work. And then if that doesn't work, then you're just instantly fucking dead.
Yeah.
Eleven would just snap
so,
your neck.
So that's my take on Callie. But I did think that it was an important episode.
Very fascinating for the future of the franchise.
And
very
that's
important
thing.
To see what happens.
And so people are hating on it. On that episode specifically, and it's because, oh, we didn't need it. Da, da, da. And again, I think that anybody who says that we didn't need it doesn't understand the full understanding of Eleven's arc. It couldn't just stop with her mother. it couldn't just stop with that. Like, you had to build to that. And I think that it did a good job. And if we're, and I told you this, if we were only going to get two seasons, I would have been mad about that episode. Mm-hmm. Because I would have thought that introducing somebody like Callie, we could have gotten
that
to 11 Scrolls
a different
way.
Yeah.
But knowing that they're planning like for five seasons or five sequels, like, because they're calling it Stranger Things a sequel.
Yeah.
So if they're going to do that, then it's totally necessary. And you had to do that. You had to introduce it somehow, if only for an episode or two. Dude, the episode where her mom alone, like, there were so many feels in this entire fucking season that when she's trying to talk to her mom and realizing that the words that her mom is repeating is that and more so the way that they set it up. Eleven asks, what's wrong with mama? And the girl says, oh, it's like she's stuck in a dream. And Eleven says, is it a good dream? And the girl goes, well, I hope so. Right? Ooh. That's how that conversation first happens at the table. And then when you come to find out that it's not a good dream, that she's reliving how she lost her daughter every single time, every single time, every single time.
Yeah.
That is so heartbreaking. Like, I couldn't understand.
That's hell. That's hell. Is being trapped in that loop. Also, the implications of the fact that her mother also has psychic shit. Which is like, oh, shit, though, this definitely goes even further than you would believe.
So I'm wondering, and I hope that they get into this, but I am wondering if her mom had psychic abilities but wasn't in the Hawkins lab because she was only there to bitch and complain because she thought that they had stole her daughter. I'm wondering, who is her father? Is it really Papa?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And two, was she already born with some sort of ability, which is why the Hawkins lab took her? And is that why Papa ended up favoring her? Because she was able to go further than the rest of them, because she may have already been born with some sort
of
something.
Up.
Yeah. Hmm. It's interesting. But I have so many questions for that. I'm hoping that's something that we're going to get to.
There'll be something that we'll find, yeah.
I would love to see a team of all of them going after everybody in the lab, like meeting all the other ones we have yet to meet. Fucking nine. Well, no, we met nine, right? Is it nine that we met?
No, eight.
No. In season one, we see one trapped in the room. I can't remember which number girl that is.
Oh, fuck. I need to go back and see that. Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
I'm pretty sure we see another one. I want to say what we do, but if we... Oh, God damn it. My brain is mesh-mashing everything. But if that's the case, I would love to see all of them. Like, 1 through 11, we're going to attack
Whichever
ones are alive. I would love to see that. So there's so many things to talk about. I love Mike, and he didn't have many, many things in this one because he's emo Mike.
It's not really his story.
It's not his story. But I will say this, and I've seen this on Facebook, and I agree 100%. Mike will save the world with no powers. Mike will always be the one with enough he understood what was happening with Will, enough to be able to explain.
He has,
like,
the empathy.
Yeah. Well, and just understand, oh, that means you could spy, but then that means he could spy too. And he gives us that foreshadowing.
That was actually, like, a really cool thing of putting him in. First of all, the betrayal, good story bit.
Yeah.
But also sticking them in the shed and having the Morse code.
Oh my God.
That was like, fuck, fucking well done.
Yes, that was awesome. But just like him, he knew when the spy had taken over Will and was running to go try to save the soldiers, and nobody ever listens to the kid.
Yep.
So sure enough, and then at one point he's like, it's too late. And he runs.
Get the fuck out, go.
He's like, now I gotta go. I gotta go because
like,
you guys didn't
listen. You stay
listen.
Here. I'm leaving.
Yeah, you guys didn't listen, and now I gotta go tell everybody else that we gotta fucking go. So I love Mike's character for that. Will was more involved in this one, and
he still unfortunately was trapped half the fucking season.
Still, but he had more. But
he did more.
He did way more, because in the first season he's trapped and you see him like shivering
and be like, "I hate my life,"
and like saying, "Mom, mom," and that's it. Like, that's all you get. This one, it's you have him a lot more in the beginning. You have him the painting of the new Christmas lights, as Vanessa and I dubbed it when it was the vine papers all over the
AKA
house.
AKA, how do we fuck up the buyer's house this season?
Yeah, basically. And then, so you had a lot more instances with him. I did like the relationship between him and Mike. Mike being sharing levels of trauma together. Mike has his. Will obviously, understandably, has his.
His boatload.
And I felt like Dustin and Lucas were so busy with Max.
Dustin. I think Dustin actually took up way more of the narrative load this season, just with all the stuff with Dart.
Specifically because
like story-wise, like his fuck up ends up
out of the four of them. Story-wise, it was Will and Dustin, because Will is obviously the one that is being in
possessed.
What's the D&T term?
Mind flayer.
The mind flayer.
Flayer.
That's what he is.
Yes.
The fact that he can go from one to another. No.
No, the mind flayer.
No. But they call a term, which is a special ability, which is allows you to be in.
Oh,
true sight. So he's got true sight, so he's the one that's dealing with that. And then you have Dustin, who's got the freaking dart. So he's got to carry a lot of what it is that's going on. And this was something else that you and I talked about. They separated. Everybody separated, and they did such a beautiful job of bringing everybody
again.
Back together again.
They did that again really
and in
well.
A way that makes fucking sense. So just a few things to kind of like things that we didn't touch up on. So Nancy and Jonathan are together now.
Well, you know, together or
no? They're together.
You think they're fully together?
They were holding hands at the dance.
They weren't next to each other.
At the end, because she has that whole dance with Dustin, but
they were looking at it. They gave each other.
They gave each other a nod. But before that, when Steve finally runs into them, she's with Jonathan.
Yeah.
Okay. So just to wrap this up real quick, not to wrap this up, but so Nancy and Jonathan have this little moment in the motel, which I thought was fucking hilarious. So they're in the hotel again, and they're like being all nostalgic about it. Like, oh, my God, here we are again. We have our scar together. And Nancy goes to say, like, hey, I waited for you, like almost to say, like, I was waiting for you to come back around. And Jonathan, understandably, for once, I'm like, hello, this dude's brother was stuck in the upside down and
like,
almost died.
Do you understand the trauma he went through?
Yeah. And so he says, I had to be there for Will. And her answer is, but I waited for you. And he says, which I thought was such a great nonchalant, I don't give a fuck line that's going to piss off a girl, but you're right. You ain't lying.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, you waited, what, like a month? You waited just a
Where's
month.
Where's the lie?
I think that's the line.
You waited for a month while I was dealing with my sick brother.
Yeah, you waited for like a month is what he says. And I was just like, yeah, that's fucked up. You should have waited a little bit longer. Then you went running back to Steve. So, of course, I'm not going to deal with your bullshit. Like, I'm just going to go off and do it. So then the guy Murray calls them out. Nasty.
Fucking loved it. Oh, man. As much of an asshole Murray was, like,
oh,
him calling
was.
Him out was just beautiful.
Oh, my God. I actually loved that entire scene. I didn't know how I was going to feel about Murray, but I enjoyed it from the minute that they got there. From Nancy throwing her dick on the table and being like, your timeline is off, and him going like, wait a second.
So there were a lot of people that were just like, and he just fucking believes them. But you have to think, like, I'm thinking from the perspective of somebody who has done, with the information that he has found a lot of stuff. And she is filling in the blanks that he doesn't know that probably corroborates his evidence.
Yeah.
So he believes it insofar as that. That would make sense. That would be something that they would fucking hide.
But see, this is where things bother me about fans sometimes when they hate on things. If you are going to say, how can he believe this? You're missing the first episode he was introduced, where he's already coming with conspiracy theories to Hopper about a Russian girl who could make things move with her brain and who was eating frozen things out of the fridge. Hopper makes fun of him. Oh, did you also hear about the guy who wears a suit and goes down the chimney? Like, there's already this thing, and they're talking about him like, it's that guy again. Is it aliens this time? So you're talking about somebody who's already...
Yeah.
They've
who's
already
willing to believe this.
Yeah, who already believes weird shit can happen. So, of course, why would he not believe this thing?
And it's a tape from somebody, like, big in the fucking lab. So it's like, okay, this matches what I'm saying, but then his whole follow-up of, like, nobody would believe it.
Yeah.
And then the whole analogy of just, like, too strong. Oh.
Yes. that whole scene itself was also awesome for me. Like, him having the vodka and trying to figure out, I need to think. And that whole interaction, like, I really thoroughly enjoyed that scene. And I didn't think I was going to. And I saw that it was going there, and I was like, ugh. Where are we going with this? And then it was great. And then him calling out Jonathan and Nancy
was fucking great.
And even better was the morning after.
Yeah.
So how was the pull out? I was like, yes.
And then
I was like, yes, yes. And he was like, I mean the couch, right?
Yeah,
No,
the couch. The couch that I had there.
It was perfect for me. So I thought that was great.
I'm like, are they going to puss out? Are they actually going to fucking do this? And then when they first stopped, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
And then, like, oh, yeah. When he opens the door, she's like, I'm already there, baby. Let's fucking do
and
this.
I like that they do that because you expect. See, what happens is you already know that these things are going to happen.
Yeah.
But what the Duffer brothers happen to do is when you think it's going to happen in step 3, they make it happen in step 5. So it's still it's still unpredictable. You're like, I know this is going to happen. Okay, he's going to go to the door, they're going to kiss, and everything's going to be great. And then they don't. And he walks away, and she walks away, and you're like, oh, are they really not going to do this? And so it didn't happen when you thought it was. It still happens.
Yeah.
So I like that they do that real quick. Like, look at the hand, left hand now. Oh, fuck, maybe it's not. And then it still happens. So I appreciated that big time when it came to them. So Steve is by himself. Poor guy.
poor getting shit on constantly this season.
Barb's family finally knows that there is no Barb and there's going to be no Barb.
So I was one of my concerns because of all the fan outcry about fucking like justice for Barb. I didn't give a fuck about Barb. Fuck Barb. I don't give a fuck. I do feel badly that her friend wanted to get some dick and she got left behind. That sucks. She's got a shitty friend. You know? But you know
but
what?
But she died because
fuck
of that
Barb.
Shitty friend.
Fuck
she
Barb.
Died because of that shitty friend. You know what I mean? Like, I think that what it was is all of, at least for me, I think that at some point, and maybe not, maybe even not 100% me, but I think that Barb was the kind of character that was unexpected for people to be all about justice for Barb.
She literally was around for like an episode and a half.
Right.
She fucking dies. Hashtag fuck Barb.
But here's what kind of a character Barb was. Barb was your stereotypical nerdy best friend whom you've been best friends with since elementary school. And because she's not the prettier one of the group, gets left behind. And so many girls mm-hmm. can understand that part that
oh.
character, and then knowing that you got left for a guy, your best friend left you because she wanted to get drunk and get fucked, and you die because of it, even though you didn't even want to be there in the first place. Like, that level of loyalty that Barb had to Nancy.
I get, don't get me wrong, I get that, but don't assign all of this extra narrative stuff on a character who's barely there for an episode and a half, and then you literally create entire, like, and of course, that's how fandom works. I get it.
No, no. And what is interesting for me is that they had already started writing the sequel before the first one was out. So they already understood that they had to touch on Barb. I don't know how much they went back and rewrote because of the madness that happened with fans wanting to know what the fuck happened to Barb. Because I do feel to a certain extent, and I'll give the haters a little bit of credit, like, yeah, okay, it was a weaker story to catapult Nancy in the sense, like, because I heard people say, like, oh, out of all things to give Nancy this character arc, let's give her Barb, who's already been dead for a year and a half.
No, but that makes no sense. That's been like that's like a heavily, well, there's a lot of guilt that she has with that,
right? But I guess what they mean is, why did you wait a year for that to happen?
Right.
Okay, so like, this isn't a story we should be jumping on. It should be something that happened in the year since we've been gone. If that was something that really bothered Nancy so much. You know what I mean? Like, it's convenient that we're getting it a year later that she's finally fed up with the bullshit lies.
I mean, okay. So I get what you're saying. But,
right.
But like that, I think that's also bullshit because you have to think about, this girl just went through fucking holy hell with dealing with this Demogorgon, right? She has the government literally barking at her to shut the fuck up about it. So she thinks she can fucking handle that shit.
And it's becoming overwhelming. Her compartmentalizing has finally exploded in her
yeah.
face. And it's probably going to dinner again. And really,
and she talks about, like, we haven't done this, we have to go.
And it's also the trigger that these people are about to sell everything that they own. And so I get it.
Yeah.
But I can also understand why some people are like, really, what the fuck? You know, and the same reason you're like, why the fuck do we give about Barb? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you need it for Nancy. And you need it for why her and Jonathan have this weird thing that they have to go and accomplish this big old and end this conspiracy bullshit and put the government out on blast.
And I think that's important. And I think what was impressive about that is that they managed to take that, which like could have been very schmaltzy with how they fucking dealt with it. They dealt with it in an interesting way. And they used, and like her justice is that their ultimate revenge is getting the fucking lab shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think that's the justice for that character. It's like, you caused my friend to die, I'm gonna fuck you, and then she found a way to do it.
Now, what's going
to
be interesting is, how do you continue these character developments when you've solved some of these problems? Because somebody like Nancy,
mm-hmm.
whose driving force was Barb, now she's done. Does Nancy go off to college and we never see Nancy again?
That's not necessarily a bad way to deal with it.
No, and it's not, because it's a year later. But then you, and so you're replacing her sort of with Max, and maybe, but you can't lose Steve because you gave Steve so much character development in this show.
Remember, Steve might not go to college based off of what he was talking about earlier.
You're right, in the car.
So he could still be around and be dissatisfied and have, you know, and not necessarily beef, but could be just, like, unhappy.
It's also that he makes a shitty boyfriend, but he's a really great fucking babysitter. which is the line he says to Nancy, of all people. But
which is impressive that he realized that. Like, he came, he's like, no, I get it.
Yeah. I still don't think that he was a shitty boyfriend. Like, in all honesty.
No, I don't think it was either.
I think that they're...
In parts of the first season? No. The first season, yes.
First season, yes. But the second season, no. He's trying to write a college entrance letter. That's what they're first talking about in the car. And he feels like an idiot because his girlfriend's 20 times smarter than he is. And he's probably going to end up in some shop working and living. So I see this guy really trying to redeem himself with this girlfriend who he's in love with. I felt for him when he was like, do you love me? And the second time when he was like, oh, all right, you were drunk, so do you? And she doesn't say it. I was with him in that alley.
Yeah. I felt part of me die when I was like, oh, God, I know that feeling.
Oh, my God, I know what that feels like. Yeah. I know exactly what that feels like. And I know exactly what it feels like to have been fooled. Because his moment in the bathroom with her when she says, this is bullshit. It's his first time going, wait a second.
Like, wait, what?
I thought we were golden. I thought we were really in love. And this is like new news for me that this is fucked up. And then to even hear, and this is again, Steve could have been your typical douchebag guy who just left the party and left you there. He didn't. He's the one who asks Jonathan to take her home.
Because she doesn't want to touch him.
Yes. But yeah. And he realizes that he can't leave her like that, which is... We're in 2017 and motherfuckers don't do that shit here. Yeah. They'll stick you in an Uber with a random guy drunk as shit with your fucking hoo-ha.
And that's the one thing is that, like, for all of the dumb posturing that he does in front of Jonathan, he knows Jonathan's a stand-up guy.
Yeah. So he knows that telling him to take her home, that Jonathan's going to do exactly, like, he's not going to take advantage of her or anything like that. And so I think that while maybe Steve isn't right for Nancy, because he's not. They're not made for each other.
Yeah.
They're not compatible. He wasn't a douchebag boyfriend either. You know what I mean?
He's a good guy. And especially how he comes in, like, on top of being a bit like he saved those fucking kids.
Twice. Because
him,
that's the... Okay, so...
And his fucking nail bat. MVP.
That is the MVP. And so I'm going to ask... We're going to talk about this on air because you and I talked about it personally. We watched The Walking Dead and we watched Stranger Things. So now we've been introduced to two nail bats. One, however, in The Walking Dead also has barbed wire around
it. That's a barbed wire bat.
Yeah, it's a barbed wire bat and it has spikes.
But it's from the same... It's the same concept.
Yes, it is the same concept. So we asked... I believe Bear was the one that prompted the question of which one do I think is more powerful? Which one do I think is better?
Yeah.
And so my answer was, Negan is the one who gives the bat power.
Right.
Where I think that the bat gives Steve powers.
Because the one thing I love is what Steve is wielding it. Like, he's like twirling it. He's like, oh, baby. Like
yeah, he's a sports guy. So he's like, noise as he's spinning it in his hand. So I actually think that the bat from Stranger Things is more powerful than the one in The Walking Dead.
The bat, that's like a, oh my God. Of course, because it's like a fucking D&D weapon. It's like a plus one, a plus two bat.
It is. And that's exactly what it is. So, and again, you can give Negan a PVC pipe and it would just be as deadly because it's Negan who's holding the PVC pipe. Whereas this, it's like, no.
It's a holy weapon.
It's a holy weapon and Steve is just the only one who has the proficiency to hold it.
He has proficiency in nail bats.
He does. Oh my God. So I thought that was epic. And definitely better. I have a few quotes that I do want to talk about here because I have some favorite quotes on this one. Of course, there was a lot more quotes from the first season. I will say that. This one was so heavy feels and character development that you don't get as many. Granted, most of them for me are still Dustin.
Gold. Oh, God, yes.
So Dustin has that moment in season one with the science teacher where he's like, what was it that he says? Oh, fuck, I can't believe I forgot it. Where he's like, why are you closing the door to our curiosity or something like that, right? So that's really important. He has a similar one in this season with the librarian where he was like something like, isn't literary the paddles of something or other?
The paddles to the boat of my knowledge or
something
like that?
Yes, and then he steals the books and keeps running. He was like, I need my paddles! And so that's another one that for me equated the one with the teacher. And then he has... the one where he's finally really mad at Dart because Muse has been eaten and he has to stick him in the cage all closed up. And his response to him is like, I'm sorry, but you ate my cat. Yeah. And then it's followed up by him with Steve in episode 6 where he...
how about that whole dialogue?
That whole scene was great with him. But more importantly, this is before he goes to actually try to find Dart. And he was like, how do you know that Dart's just not a lizard? And Dustin's response is because his face opened up and he ate my cat. reaction. Like, yeah.
That dryness. Like,
not a lizard.
Not a lizard. I never seen a lizard do that.
And then again, Steve and Dustin, and this it goes to show that Steve isn't that smart, and it's a very, and Dustin is just a little bit smarter than him for certain things. And it's when they're talking about how, like the way that the demodogs are working and all this other stuff, and they make a and Steve tries to make an analogy, or and he was like, oh, like the Germans,
yes.
And then Dustin is quick to correct him. No, the Nazis.
You're like, no.
The Nazis.
Almost there.
Yeah, and so that was another great moment.
Another great Dustin moment is calling out Mr. Wheeler, where he's like, son of a bitch, you know you're useless.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was just like, yes.
Which, first of all, can we talk about the parents real quick? The Wheelers are the worst
fucking parents.
Fucking parents ever.
They're the
your
stereotypical
kids have
shitty.
Disappeared. First of all, your son held captive a girl in your basement for like weeks and nobody knew shit. The fort is still up and it's like nothing's a big deal. Your daughter has plenty of times gone off, had boys sleep
fucked
in the
off,
room,
yeah.
And none of you ever know a fucking lick of shit ever. Again, Mike is not home for, like, ever. He's
yep.
with Will the entire time. Nancy has lied on a school night and because they skip school.
Yeah, I'm sleeping over.
Yeah, and then you're gone where you're staying at a motel. You've gone to this other city. You stayed at a motel. She's at least gone 2.5 nights because
yeah.
she's at the hotel for one and she's at Murray's for another one.
Yeah.
And nobody cares at all. The husband is the most worthless piece of shit.
Oh, he's
which
fucking
is why
garbage.
I kind of wanted her to do something with Billy.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Sake.
It's just like she needs a good dick in it. She
yeah.
deserves it after dealing with
and
that.
And then I will say Joyce is the best parent ever to 50% of her kids because
yeah.
she is the best mom to Will ever. Ever. And poor fucking Jonathan is.
Well,
always...
no, I feel that she was like, look, because the way that Jonathan deals with Joyce, like, you could tell there's a strong relationship there. It's just that I think you could tell that, like, she's like, okay, Jonathan, you can more or less take care of yourself. Will is going to need a little more help.
Yeah.
He's more sensitive. You can tell that he can't really
I guess
stuff.
So, but I still, like, she's like, I don't know where Jonathan is. When she didn't know where Will was for, like, 5 seconds, granted, I know what happened to him, but still,
yeah.
you'd be worried. If I knew that I lived now in a world where Demogorgons existed and the world could go upside down and all this other shit, I'd be worried about both my kids, both the one who was already trapped and the other
kid. To be fair, the other one used fire, guns, and nail bats to fight it. He can handle himself.
I know, but still. And not even, because when Hopper has the gun and says, who can shoot
yeah.
this, Jonathan doesn't pick it
he's
up because
like,
he knows he's not the better shot. And then Nancy fucking
Nancy's
takes
the
it.
Better shot, yeah.
And Nancy goes hard with that shit, which was fucking awesome,
fucking
too.
Great.
But yeah, so.
Let's go into the other two families that we actually saw real quick.
Which is Dustin's
mom. Dustin's mom. Fucking adorable, like it, like great relationship.
Oh, they were perfect. That casting was great with that one.
And then Lucas's parents, great, but more importantly,
his sister, his little
ball of sass,
fucking sister, whose name is Erica, is hilarious. That entire interaction which she has with Dustin on the walkie-talkie is epic.
I'm gonna tell him it's a code. Shut your mouth.
That was
and the realest line of the father is your mother is never wrong.
Yes.
Like yeah, I was like, ooh,
I know.
Smooth.
Vanessa heard that and she was like, oh, did you hear that? And I was just like,
smooth as fuck.
Oh yeah, it was smooth as fuck and correct.
Yeah,
yeah, they were great. And you want to know what I thought was rather interesting is, as always, they have all these 80s things in the show, and give or take, they're usually off a year or two, but fucking suck it.
They're pretty close.
You know,
yeah.
They're pretty freaking close. What I thought was cool was they are reflective of the election that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you get two parents who are voting for two different people. You have the Wheelers who are voting for Reagan, and then you have Dustin's mom who's voting for
Mondale.
If
you know anything about like how that election went off, like it was a fucking landslide. So,
Reagan.
So it was just like, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. But it, and they talk about that in Beyond Stranger Things of,
yeah, I definitely picked up on that.
Yeah, and I picked up on that too. Yeah. I always like to catch those little like nuances and little things like that are in the background, like that are sometimes not meant to be in the background. You know, they're meant to show you also financial stability, mm-hmm. who would vote for who, why they would vote one way or another, and things of that nature. I
Of course the Wheelers would vote for Reagan. Of course they would.
Of course they would. And it was great. I mean, it was fantastic. I have a few notes here. Did I forget anything that I wanted to say?
Yeah, I got one more thing I want to say, but let's look at your notes first.
Because I make sure that I always somehow, no matter what I'm into, can bring it full circle right around to Harry Potter. Right?
I'm ready.
Yeah. I can't go on without saying that Will was a Horcrux for the Mind Flayer.
Sort of, yeah.
What? Neither one can die while the other one is alive.
It was a virus. It was more of a virus analogy than a Horcrux analogy.
It's totally a Horcrux. They couldn't
oof.
Because they couldn't kill the Mind Flayer without killing Will.
Let me tell you, although the body horror involved with all the Mind Flayer stuff, the way like it just pulls in and out of his body, it was just like, oh God, like.
But technically, he was a Horcrux because the Mind Flayer.
Yeah, but the difference was is that they were able to remove the Horcrux from him.
Yes, I mean maybe Harry could have done that, and we would have had a totally different.
Well, I mean, Harry technically did survive after being killed because
technically they took it out of him. So just saying.
They took it out of him by killing him.
They basically are trying to kill the Mind Flayer inside.
They basically fried him.
Yeah, they basically did. It was like, we're going to put
By the way, Joyce was great. Like, get out of my son! Like, oh my God!
You know what? I will say that, just to touch on that real quick, Joyce did a really good... They did a good job with showing... How do I word this? In the first season and for the most of the beginning of the second season, Joyce plays your typical mother who almost doesn't want to jeopardize her son in any way. Or put him in any danger and like this little bubble and things like that. So when Joyce, I thought that was important for her character. When Joyce comes to the realization that her son isn't completely there and that she's going to have to do some really fucked up shit, like tying him to a chair and doing all of those things. I thought that was really important.
Well,
for
it starts in the hospital. Like that from that moment when you see her like, oh, we're going to have to do something about this.
Yeah, and some people would find that hard as a parent and you would expect, especially like a mom like Joyce has played, that she would have had a hard time or this would have had to have been a fight.
Oh, it was you could tell it was a fight.
But it was a fight to make her do these things, and it wasn't. And even more so, what ends up happening to Bob is an even bigger catapult for her.
Like, fuck this thing.
Fuck this thing. And I know you're my son, but you're not my son right now, so I'm going to tell you this pull.
Get out of my son.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we haven't touched on Bob, and I do want to touch on him.
Oh yeah, we have to touch on. We definitely have to touch on Bob because.
Did you feel like Bob was a villain for a little while?
I never thought he was a villain. I thought that he was just like a happy buffoon.
Okay.
Because honestly, the advice that he gives to Will, that's good advice about like he thinks that he's like, oh, because again,
just face your fears.
Well, because he also thinks that like these are just normal nightmares. Because he's not being given the information.
Right.
So for him, he's just like, yeah, no, that's how I faced my fear. I literally faced it down.
Yeah. I already knew that this was going to shit when that happened. That and he made a joke about Pennywise. And I was like, you have no idea what the fuck you're doing right now to this poor kid. Like, please don't listen to him, Will.
It's just that he always meant so well to all these characters. For one, I'm like, nothing good could happen to this dude.
Yeah.
When he walked around and solved the puzzle, I was like, oh, I think this dude's gonna fucking die.
Yeah, I kind of.
And then
knew.
when they were running in the hospital, I'm like, he is so fucking dead.
And they did again that thing where I told you where you think it's gonna happen in step two and it doesn't.
It happens in step four or five. Yeah,
and that they did again because I legit thought he's gonna die in this season. Okay, fine. And so you have him running through the tunnels, fucking being Bob the fucking superhero, Bob newbie superhero, and that's exactly what he is. And then the broom drops. And you're like, oh, he's going to die now.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't. And he makes it out again. And you're like, oh, okay. Not going to happen. And then out of nowhere.
Tackled
by a demodog. Like, out of nowhere. That one was one of those jump fights.
And somebody made a comment about, like, how the guns are not that effective on them. And Hopper was slow on the draw because they got the drop on Bob.
Yeah.
But even then, he put a couple rounds into that thing, and that thing didn't fucking move.
No. It's all about the nail bat.
Nail bats. Pure concussive force with a fucking nail bat.
Well, I mean, you have to take it. I'm going to get semi, I guess, scientific here. I would assume that something that has the consistency of a slug, right, if it's shot,
if it's a small impact,
it won't really do much, right?
Because
so I could see where a bat forcefully hitting something full on, where you're able to kind of bump it out of the way.
A lot of surface area.
A lot of surface area. I think that it's going to do. I can I can wrap my head around that. I can go, well, I can see why a bullet would go through some slimy, weird creature.
And the one thing that I kind of thought was not really delved into too much, because he makes the comment of, oh, they don't like water.
Yeah.
And then he drops the water on them, and it runs the fuck away.
Yeah.
And that was the one plot hole where I thought, should have just turned on the water in the whole facility.
Like the sprinklers,
and that would have given him enough time to be able to... That's literally one of the only, like, plot holes that I could see, was that, like, he did this in one place to get it the fuck out of that area. Out of that area so everybody else could escape. The only thing I could think of is just pure carelessness, which I get. You can completely get when you're fucking... Like, he forgot the gun,
well,
which is
I figure, that's definitely... You're also talking about somebody who was kind of just thrown into the loop of everything that was going on and really having... And not your... He's not a cop like Hopper.
Yeah.
He's like an RCA. Like, you know, he works
he's
at
a Radio Shack.
You know, but I also want to take into consideration that he had to go restart the power. And sometimes sprinklers run on that kind of stuff. So you would have had to have done a lot more... He thought he was going to be able to open up the doors, run out,
but
and go.
But remember, he also set up he also restored the power in all the floors. So that's what I mean. That was
okay.
But again, I still take it as I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, you're just thinking about escaping at that point more than anything else. Now, what's interesting for me is, so all of that happened, and Dr. Owens...
I'm glad you mentioned Dr. Owens, because I expected Dr. Owens, because it's Paul Reiser.
Yes.
Which, if you're a fan of Aliens, he's the dickheaded scientist in Aliens. So I thought they were going to go full dickhead with him. And they didn't go full dickhead with
him,
which another surprise that they did.
Yeah, actually, that character thoroughly surprised me. For one, my heart broke a little bit when I saw how old Paul Reiser looks.
Yeah.
And he is my Mad About You, my favorite. He's so good. I've read his comedy books. I've read his couples books.
Wow.
I love Paul Reiser. And so seeing him, I was like, yay, oh no, oh, how old I am. Like all of these things went through me. And then he did seem like the dick doctor who was lying to them and really hiding things. But then it's the scene when all the doctors are sitting together that you come to realize that he knows just as little as everybody else does. And then one of the doctors was like, well, if he dies, he dies. Cause he's the one that's saying like, oh, we can't do this,
like,
because
don't
we're going
to
kill Will.
Kid.
And the other guy was like, well, if that happens, he's dead. We have to handle it. And he's like, no, give me a second.
Let me think about this.
So I could see him as being wrapped up in the politics.
He's
of
more
what
of a buffoon
working.
Than yeah. than ill, because at the end, like,
He helps. He's the one who helps Bob, navigates him through all the different
areas. Navigates everybody through their areas and helps.
Gets them out, and Will gets out, and everybody gets out. So I did think that he was going to be the evil. I actually thought he was going to be like the next Papa.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, okay, you're this prick who's going to lie to everybody and so on and so forth. And then they played it so well with how Joyce was handling the doctor, but then when you see him alone with Hopper, you realize that there's information that isn't necessarily being given everywhere.
Not everybody's being given the full amount of information.
Right, exactly. Hopper's really the one that has the most amount of information. I want to see where, because we don't know if Dr. Owens survived that hospital.
No, he did. He showed up at the very end.
That's right.
Because he gave, but he's done. You could tell he was like, no.
I'm retired. I'm done.
I want nothing to do with this. I gave you this birth certificate. So I guess the last thing I would want to talk about would be probably the ending.
The snowball.
The snowball, which...
Yeah, which I've been waiting to talk about.
Yeah.
Because
it's the right way to end it.
Yeah.
So, of course, any 80s movie, any 80s thing has to end with a prom.
Yes.
And I really love how this wrapped up the character relationships in like a nice bow. The fucking terror of asking, you know, a girl, if you're a guy, asking a girl to dance.
Yeah.
And of course, this sums up with Lucas obviously being like, you know, trying to psych himself up to be able to ask Max for a dance.
Even though they had already had their little moments earlier than that, because she grabs his hand in the bus when they get scared.
Yeah, but that's tension. That's not. This is ostensibly supposed to be like, hey, we're all cool.
I know.
I can't fucking focus on that. Poor Dustin, like, with that fucking crazy ass curly hair of his, like, just like, all right, I'm gonna do what Steve tells me. And he goes in, and, you know, he doesn't look that bad.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't. But it really is. Everybody's like,
what the fuck is
this? Fuck is that? Yeah. Like,
and then he went up with such confidence to that group of girls.
I love it. Oh, I felt
and like so confident that he already stretched out his hands. Like, come,
yeah,
on,
let's do this.
Come on, like this, like you're gonna say yes. And he talks about it in Beyond Stranger Things. It doesn't have a moment like. In that moment, he realizes, I'm not Steve.
Yeah.
And even though Steve gave me this advice...
Oh, you saw it on his face, too. Like, that was the heartbreaking, like...
But then Nancy came in for the win. And that moment where Nancy dances with Dustin, and it, like, reminds him, like, girls are stupid at this age. You know, later on, we get it right, which is why I tell you she ends up with Jonathan.
Yeah. That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I
yeah.
Didn't take that
she ends up telling him, we get it right eventually. You know, we end up with the right guy.
Seeing those jealous bitches looking at him dancing with Nancy is like, oh!
Yeah, and that's why I kind of love Nancy Ford even more. Like, I'm going to show that you're dancing with a high school girl and that I don't give a shit to dance with you. Yeah. And then I'm going to give you a little bit of advice from a chick's end, which is interesting to see Dustin get advice from both Steve and Nancy.
Yeah, oh, man, that's really interesting.
Yeah, both on different aspects of it. Both Steve as that guy that everybody always thinks is
gives him the male confidence, but then, like, the opposite end of, like...
The emotional confidence from Nancy.
Yes,
you know, emotional confidence.
Oh, my God, that's so sweet. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, it's so brilliant that it's great. And then, of course, given how the last season ended, which was Eleven was supposed to go to the snowball with Mike, and then shit went down and she couldn't. So you're like... Yes, we end with the snowball. Fuck yes, yes. And then boom, we have Mike and Eleven, and then the epic kisses with everyone, which Lucas and Max weren't supposed to kiss.
Which is crazy to think about it. Like, why wouldn't they? Like, it
just wasn't supposed to happen because it wasn't such a buildup. But thanks to Millie over there.
But you think about how the show progresses. I'm like, yeah, of course they would kiss.
They didn't think it was important because really the most epic kiss you're waiting for is 11 and
that's
Mike.
The most important kiss. And the other one is like a fun surprise. Yeah. Like, oh, even Lucas is like, ah.
But Millie is the one who set that one up. For those of you who are listening who maybe have not seen Beyond Stranger Things, she jokingly made the joke to the girl who plays Max saying, are you ready for your kiss scene today? And Max is
had a fucking
out,
meltdown.
Had a meltdown and was like, no, no, no. And since it became such a big thing on set that they made her do it. And then they had to do more takes than Mike and Eleven because they kept getting the wrong angle.
I'm coming in.
That's so awesome. You guys, if you haven't seen Beyond Stranger Things, you have to. First of all, I love Finn. I love Mike and I love Finn. Like,
yeah,
Finn is
Finn Wolfhard. Has
Finn
so much
Wolfhard.
Fucking
I love him. I love him so hardcore. I love him for just who he is as a kid. I follow him on Twitter and his tweets are hilarious. Who he is. I mean, you have a kid who's intelligent enough that when his talent agent was accused of sexual assault, he fired him. Because he was I don't want to deal with that.
His comment was literally like, even though I don't have a daughter because I'm literally in the eighth grade, I know sexual assault isn't very good. So,
yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, so no, I'm going to fire
you. Fuck you.
But the fact that he has learned to somehow be a ventriloquist and be able
just like
to...
like under his breath, like, I'm coming in.
I'm coming in. to
Millie, get the shot.
To get the shot, which is great.
Yeah.
Just so, and I can see that softening up the moment, too, as two actors, especially since it was Millie's first kiss for real in season one and season two. So I thought that was fucking epic. It was just epic.
And so at first I thought, when I first watched it, and I was like, man, using the police, I'll be watched. Like, that song was huge at that time. I know why they chose it, and it was misconstrued in a lot of other places. But that's a very creepy song about a stalker.
Yeah.
And then the last shot, which shows the upside down and the shadow monster literally watching over them, like, okay, now I know why they chose that.
You want to know what's funny? I thought it was funny for two reasons. One, I understood the whole shadow monster and the whole nine. But I also thought that it was funny because Max calls Lucas her stalker the whole time.
That's right, yeah.
She always calls him stalker.
Yeah.
And so when they play that song and they're dancing, I was just like, okay, you know,
I get it.
I get what's happening. And to an extent, I felt like Mike and Eleven were stalking each other. Mike always
back
and forth. And oh my God, I'm sorry, but that scene where she's standing in front of him after having like tried to find him and he's in the tent and they have all of those moments for me were too much. Yeah. Now, I know that Bob is gone.
Poor Bob.
But I know that Hopper and Joyce are going to end up
waiting.
Together.
He's Hopper been has waiting. Been waiting.
Keys was trying to give her hints the whole time when they share a cigarette. Oh, do you remember in high school we used to share?
No, she
cigarette
knows it.
Though.
She's not stupid. She knows exactly why. But she's with Bob at that point.
But now it's free. So to wrap this up, beautifully. What are your, if any, wants, desires, anticipations, or expectations for season, for the third?
Well, so we dealt with a lot of the individual issues. The lab is closed, right? So the main thing connecting these two worlds is ostensibly done.
Right.
However, we still don't know what kind of things that the Demodogs left behind, whatever it was connected with the Shadow Monster. So I get the feeling that the way that they could bring back the Upside Down and anything in the Upside Down is with the other missing test subjects. Eleven's direct connection and being able to find people makes her an easy sort of way that she can open up the gate. But who's to say what any of these other numbers can do? If any of the other numbers are still alive,
right,
how they can end up connecting? And I definitely think that they're going to have to address 8.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. Kali is definitely going to be a big issue.
I wonder if Eleven, in her need to check in with her sister, makes it so that she accidentally opens up the gate again. And in turn,
they never really got into specifics on what causes the gates to open.
No, they didn't. And I think that was purposeful.
Oh, yeah.
So that we continue to be able to, so that they have more room to play.
Yeah.
And more room to introduce those things and us not be able to be like, well, that's a loophole because you already said this in season 2. And I think that was very much purposeful. I expect more of 8, and I expect, I want to see what happens with Will.
See where he goes from here.
Right, because I can't, and remind me, just refresh my memory, where does he end up at the end of the season?
He's free from it. He ends up dancing with the one girl who walks up to him.
Oh, that's right.
Says, "Hey, Samba, I want to dance." He's like, "I don't remember the
yeah.
Yes."
Yeah. But I wonder if he still has first sight. And
that
I'm
would
wondering,
be interesting. They never addressed it.
They never address it. I'm wondering if he still has that
just
ability.
Has a permanent connection.
And maybe he is able to kind of tell Eleven, like, I need you to figure this out because shit is going to go down again. And see how that works. I don't know, because they did such a good job of fucking with us, because when you look at the poster, it's the four of them on bikes staring at the Shadow Monster coming over Hawkins in their Ghostbusters mm-hmm. outfits, and none of that happens. That is not at all
nope.
how any of that happens. So, which was so smart, because I was waiting for that scene the whole time. I was like, oh, it's going to be now. Nope, nope, nope.
Oh, yeah,
nope.
We didn't bring up when they were in the ghost, like, the terror they felt with the Ghostbuster outfits. Literally, like, I cringed so fucking hard, like.
But I didn't, because I dressed up every year for school, and everybody did.
Everybody did. That's the thing. But the idea of, oh, they're the only ones who
oh
dressed
God.
Up. Like, that idea, I just died a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, and that was a great scene, too, because I thought Dustin was finding the Shadow Monster. I thought that was what was going to happen.
Like, holy
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, when he's like, what? Guys, what the fuck? Like, when I was like, oh, my God, no, it's coming. And then he was like, we're the only ones in costume. And I liked the idea of the two of them fighting over the
Venkman.
Same ghost, Venkman, which was great. And the racist comment that they decided to do, letting Lucas be the one that, like, I know why you wanted me to be him. Like, I thought that was genius.
Which, listen, I would like to have a talk with Lucas, because, hey, guess what? Winston, pretty fucking cool. I know he comes in late. I know he's not a
but
scientist.
But he saves.
Not just that he saves it, but he is a reflection of every person in that, where it's just like, this is just a fucking job. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I got to deal with fucking ghosts.
But yeah, so I think that we're going to get more of 8 or another one. Another one. And they
yeah.
might be setting this up for the big finale that they're working towards.
Well, obviously, whatever big finale they do is going to have to deal with massive, massive stuff with the Upside Down. And
oh,
the fact that
definitely.
The Shadow, or, oh, shit. Oh, shit. I didn't think about this. What if 8 fucks up, opens up a gate, Shadow Monster possesses her? Like, she would literally be the most dangerous person for the Shadow Monster to possess.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so they've left it open.
They got some shit there.
They got some definite shit. So let us know what you guys thought about the episode and what you thought about our breakdown and way of interpreting episodes that most people, like the Chicago episode, a.k.a. the Lost Sister episode. Was there quotes we missed that you really loved? What did you not like? Did you hate Billy as much as I did? Let us know. Comment, like, share, the whole nine. As always, you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at CueTheMic.
Find me on Twitter at Pedro Cortez Get, that's Cortez with an S, and on Instagram at Gurren Lagann.
And you can follow The Talking Geek on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at The Talking Geek. And you can also check out our Patreon, where we drop a bunch of bonus content all the time. And that's pretty much it. So until the next time, everybody, stay geeky and stay strange.